everyone. Welcome back to the Add to My Playlist podcast. I have a great guest with me today. He's got a wall of guitars, one with a star, which I'm like completely fixated on in the background. Chris Eveling's with me. We're going to be talking about all kinds of music stuff, and I'm so excited to have Chris on. Been following his stuff on Spotify. I'm subscribed, Chris, and enjoying the music as well. Chris, welcome to the podcast. Nice to have you here on Add to My Playlist podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the ad on following the songs, man.
There you go. And now you got to talk about the star guitar behind you hanging on the wall. What is that thing?
Yeah, right? It's a guitar that you cannot play on your lap. That's for sure.
No way.
It's just too sharp, too pointy. I teach guitar, and I had a student in here once, and I was doing a lesson, and I was just, right when he walked in, I was looking online at these star guitars, and it's actually... It's called the Waterloo guitar, and it was in ABBA's video in 1971 or something. The Waterloo video, Bjorn was playing this style guitar. So I've been looking online, seeing if I can find one. They didn't make too many. The manufacturer's no longer available. And my student, he's in his late 70s, he's loves working with wood, and he said, "Well, I can build you that." And I thought he was just joking around and small talk, but... As we continued to discuss it, he goes, "No, I build lots of guitars. I'll bring a few next week for you." And he brought a few that he has built over the years, and they played great. They had the intonation was set up, the frets were sharp, the pickup sounded good. I'm like, okay, this guy. Anyways, I don't know, month and a half later, I went to his place, and he had this star guitar, and it's got glitter in it. He took glitter from like nail polish, the flakes, and he put it in a salt and pepper shaker. And that's how he applied it on top and then clear coated over. But it's the specs. He took the actual picture and did it all up. And it's, if you put it side by side to the other one, it's, everything's there. So I planned an ABBA tribute and I brought that out. Now it's for the people that really are into ABBA. When they see that guitar, you see their, yeah. I only bring it out for Waterloo and maybe one other song, but you see their face kind of, that's that guitar, right? So it adds to the show. It was a really special gift from my student as well. Donald Swale is his name.
Nice.
And yeah, so it's that out of all the guitars that are around, everyone, even my students, they all point to that one. They're like, "Tell me about that," right? So it's an odd looking thing, but it plays great.
It must be kind of cool when the light's in it too. It's going to bounce light all off of it, right?
It's like a disco ball.
It's
cool. You can see it all over people's faces in the crowd, right? Just the speckles. It's neat.
Awesome. Okay, so talk about your music background, Chris. There's so much on your YouTube channel. Just doing some research and background stuff on you. There's like tons of clips of you on YouTube mastering solos for some of my favorite bands. And you're all over the place doing a lot of stuff up here in Canada musically and down in the States too, which is great. Talk a little bit about your music stuff. When did all this start for you?
Yeah, and thanks for that with the comments. It all started when I was younger, and my grandfather was a piano tuner. And when I would go to visit, he would have like a couple pianos in the house, half of them torn apart, right? He'd taken the hammers off some of the keys, and there was a few uprights in the hallway as soon as you walk in, and another upright just outside the kitchen, and a grand in the back, or a couple more uprights. So I got to, at a very early age, I was pictures of me sitting on his lap, and he would just play, but I was just mesmerized, when he was hitting those keys and just the notes that would come out. He was a brilliant player. Like, he wasn't just tinkering around. He was incredible. And it sparked an interest with me early on. But it wasn't until, I guess, 86, I had a Walkman, and my grandfather went out to a music store, and he just asked them, "What's the number one selling album this year?" And it was 1986, so it was Van Halen's 5150, which is incredible, because if you look back in 1986, if you look at the top selling albums, like number 2 through 9, it would have changed my path immensely, man. Like, there was a couple good ones. I think Genesis was on there, but there were some questionable, I shouldn't say questionable, just genres that I'm just not that interested in these days. I got this Van Halen tape, and I would just play it frontwards, backwards, till the batteries died, put new batteries in, and that's the only tape I have, so that's all I listen to. And it's an incredible album from Van Halen, and, Sammy's vocal performance was incredible. He was at the top of the range compared to other bands, like, vocally. But it was the middle sections of the songs where I heard all this, you know, this instrument. I didn't even know what it was at the time, but just it gave me goosebumps, it gave me chills, and it was the dive bombs and the harmonics and the tapping and all that stuff. That anyone that listened to Van Halen for the first time, they'll have a similar story. Like, what is that? What was that?
Yeah.
How did he do that? That was the big one as I got playing, right? So that just got me interested in that sound. My granddad told me it was a guitar, so I did a summer job in the farm fields in southwestern Ontario. Saved up enough, bought an electric guitar. My parents got me lessons that following fall, and I have not put the guitar down since. It's been a 33-year passion.
Oh, the coolest grandfather ever to come up with that in your hand, right? Come on.
I'll tell you the coolest part about it is, you remember the guitar magazines in the 80s and 90s, right? I would bring one of those over, open it up to the tab section, but it used to have tab and the notes. And my grandfather could read like that.
Oh, come on.
Oh, I would put down, you name the band from that genre, but we'll just keep going with Van Halen. Yeah. I would put 5150, the music there. And dun, 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 dun. He would just start playing it left hand, right hand, vocal notes on top of it. Never heard the song ever. And it was because he saw the BPM, you know, if it was 128, boom, he had that locked in. He had and everything was there.
Wow.
Everything. But the coolest part about it, I just remember, because he used to smoke, he'd have a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and he'd get to the solo section, and he would start, and then he'd stop a bit, and then his face would light up, and he'd be like, oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant, because he thought it would go a certain, right, when we play Elvis and stuff like that, when it goes to the four chord, we kind of understand what the next transition to five, and we can do a little walk up, and it always works. That's the magic of Van Halen. He just combined everything, and sometimes it was very unpredictable, but it was super pleasing to the ears. So when I saw at an early age my grandfather's face light up, I knew, hey, there's something. I could already tell there's something magical with my ear, but seeing his face go, wow, that guy's really good, I like what he did there. And those are special moments that I cherish for sure.
It's amazing. That's it. And to see that inspiration kind of make its way down to you, that's cool. Were your parents also musical, or did it kind of skip a generation?
No, they didn't play any instruments, but it was cool that the spectrum, I used to tell people, and now that I'm in an ABBA tribute, but I used to say when they asked what music I was into, I'd be like, from ABBA to Zeppelin. Just that whole A to Z. Yeah, the whole thing. But I remember my mom had like Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Jimi Hendrix. She had some really cool stuff on that side. And then my stepfather was more into, I think, the poppier stuff, right?
Yes.
So he had a different album. But then I got into a lot of it. I'd play it all. It was really cool over here. But over there at an early age, like I've always listened to everything. And I try to, you know, let my students know that too. Even if you're not into jazz or country, you should learn some of those things on the guitar, even if you're into metal. Because some of those licks you can transfer over here, right? Or
yeah.
It just makes us, my opinion is, it makes us better players if we can do a bunch of different genres, right?
Okay, that's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your students as well, like your teaching and stuff. Is it all in person? Are you doing stuff online as well?
So I was a factory guy for 21 years, and I made a life-changing decision 4 years ago. I got out of that career, and I decided to go more full-time into music. And when I started teaching, I've always taught over the years, but I went full-time when I came and moved here. But at that time, COVID was just starting, so a lot of it was online. And then I started teaching through the Canada Music Academy, where they would farm out all over. They would advertise, so I would just keep getting registrations from British Columbia, Prince Edward Island, Alberta, all over. Yeah, which was incredible. And then when things started opening up, I had some in-person as well. Excuse me. But when things opened up, I do in-person and online now.
Good.
And I enjoy it. It doesn't even feel like any kind of work. I don't even think I teach. I just share, right?
Yeah.
And my favorite students, I like them all, but my favorite are those ones that are just really, I can see myself at that age. And they come in here and they're like, show me this Metallica riff. And you, as soon as they piece the notes together,
yeah,
face lights up, and I love that. I love that, right?
Almost in the same way you did for your grandfather.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I would, I was 15, and I was more excited to go to his house and find out what diminished chords were in seven chords instead of anything in high school that day, right? I'm like, I know what augmented is now, right? And that it interests me. It's always interested me.
Nice.
So I love teaching. And it makes us better players when we teach too, because sometimes the student will ask a certain question. I never thought about it that way. And it might open up a little door somewhere else or let some light in us. I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, like that. That's a great way to look at it. I never viewed it that way. Because we all look at the instrument different, right? We have our box patterns, we have our shapes, we have the standard theory things, but all theory does is describe what's happening. But when we apply our own mindset to it, it's very interesting to me to hear everyone else's visions of the fretboard.
Yeah, and to jump back to what, you know, Eddie Van Halen and stuff, and he was just like a genius creating stuff out of nothing, and just like, and then try to explain it. And that's why I was doing some research on them as well, and that's kind of the origin story of Tab, is they just couldn't explain it otherwise, so they had to give it a number to kind of explain what he was doing.
Yeah, but even if you take some of Eddie, especially off the first album, the solo and I'm the One, and a lot of stuff off the first couple, if you took that to a music theory person, they broke it down, they're like, that theory wise it's not correct. But right where you and I laugh, say it's definitely correct. But then Eddie's whole thing too was, if it sounds good, it is good. Who cares? Like, you only have 12 notes, but those notes is up to you. And that's a really cool way to look at it. And I still tell my students, like, this is the theory of it. But just because you're in the key of C doesn't mean you can't play a D sharp. You throw it, you know, like, it's a flavor thing, and you do whatever you want with it, but theory just helps us understand it. So yeah, tablature, when I first, those first couple albums, when I bought them at a young age, looking at Eddie's solos, I was like, how are those notes going into one measure? You know, I don't get it. With so much feeling too, right?
Yeah. That's great. Awesome. Okay, so let's talk some of your songs, Chris. One I've been listening to a lot right now is Within. I'm really enjoying Within. Can you kind of give us the story behind Within?
Sure, yeah. It's, where do I start with that? That one is, for me on a personal level, there's a saying that I'm really, really drawn to. And it's, my internal condition is a perfect reflection of my, oh, sorry, I got that backwards. My outer experiences are a perfect reflection of my internal condition. So what that means is, if I'm good on the inside, if I'm good, if I feel healthy, if I'm, you know, if I'm in a good place, then everything around me seems a lot better. If I'm not good within, everything around me is not good. So if I don't go within, I go without, right? Nice. And I've always been, yeah, I love that. Just, hey, focus on yourself, you know, just worry about your own backyard, and then everything else looks good. So for me, that was the first song I recorded when I moved here. And it was just a very, very cool thing coming here. I had a very, just a healthier way of living, right? So I wanted to call it Within, because that's where the song came from too. The intro is something that's just like, it's called a drone. I don't know if you've ever played around with this musically, but when you have a drone note, and that's just E drone, it doesn't have a third in there. So it's not major, it's not minor. You can play any scale you want over top of that drone. So that little, the intro to that is just E. It's just that note. So then you can play around with emotions and go, hey, here's a happy major sound, go into minor, put a little mode in there, right? You can do whatever you want. It's a really cool exercise to play. So as I was playing it, one time I started, again, back to the Van Halen roots, doing that tapped harmonic thing, the Dance the Night Away or Mean Street, right? Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. So I was trying to figure out I was playing, I was doing stuff, I picked a few harmonics, I couldn't find it, and then I was just fooling around tapping, I'm like, oh, that's it. Like, I loved the tapping part of that, the intro and the way it worked together.
Yeah.
So that's all I had, and then I knew I wanted it to be an E major. To me, that I love playing an E major on the guitar with the open string things you can do, and I just laid down. I was very influenced, too, after Van Halen with Joe Satriani. By Joe Satriani. And I love the way that Joe goes, there he is, he can shred. But before all that, a lot of his songs, you can sing his vocal, his guitar parts, right?
Yeah.
Like Always With Me, Always With You, all that stuff. It had its flashy stuff, but also this beautiful melody inside of it. So I really tried to channel some of that influence in the verse part of this. I wanted to be able to sing it. So I just wrote an E. I did that, added the guitar vocal melody over top. I was really liking the way it was sounding. So I reached out to Forrest Williams from Big Wreck and asked if he'd be interested in playing drums. And to my surprise, he was like, yeah, sure, send me what you have. And that was a little nerve-wracking, right? Like he was playing with Ian Thornley for a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. So for me to send him anything, I'm like, oh, man, maybe this isn't the one. Like I liked it. I liked the way it sounded. And I thought, well, here's hoping, right? And I sent it off. And he goes, yeah, man, absolutely. And he was an absolute gentleman. Afterwards, he sent me a little video of how he mic'd up his drums and what mics he used, what drums he used. He did a video performance of himself in case I wanted to piece together a video and everything. And just nice. A really great guy to work with. And I wish I probably still have them. I could send you the isolated drum tracks. Man, I'm telling you. You know when you hear isolated drums, mm-hmm. there's drums and then there's drums.
Yeah.
It was so musical. Like there was nothing behind it. It was just Forrest playing the drums. It was like, you know, it kind of had like a bond. I'm not saying Within is like Bond, but it had that feel and vibe, the way he mic'd it up and beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, so then I recorded it at Powder Room Studios in Brockville. Randy Orr owns that, and he's become a good friend of mine. And he took me out for breakfast once, and he said he has a friend coming by, and he wants to introduce us together and whatever. And he came in, and it was Gary Lalonde, the bass player from Honeymoon Suite. And Randy's been, I think Randy shared the stage with him a few times in his Johnny Canuck tribute band. It's a tribute to all Canadian music. And then Randy's been recording a lot of Gary's tracks, I think recently for the new Toronto album that's coming out. And I think he did a few bass tracks for Honeymoon Suite that Gary, you know, recorded with him. Anyways, we got talking, and at the end of breakfast, Gary gracefully offered if you ever need any tracks or any bass parts. I think I messaged him that night. Said, if you don't mind, man, if we could talk about it. And he was very, very cool, very easy. And again, when he sent his bass line, I played with some great bass players over the years, but when he sent it, it was isolated. Super melodic, man.
Yeah.
Super melodic. I'm like, okay, so then let's piece it together. Because sometimes this piece and that piece doesn't work together, right?
Yeah.
We put it together, you know, and they didn't play, you know, Forrest is down in Boston and Gary's close to here. Pieced it together. There it is.
Perfect.
Yeah, I didn't want to put guitar on it. Just leave it go. Yeah. So then we added the acoustic and some clean guitar parts, and it all just kind of fell together really nicely. Really nicely. I was really happy with it.
So this is a great song with superstars on here, including you, Chris, because you pulled it all together. This is awesome. I'm a huge Honeymoon Suite fan. My wife got me tickets, front row. We had a meet and greet after with bunch of other people, and I got to meet everybody. And these guys are so cool, man.
Super
so
chill
cool. Oh, yeah, it was great. Really, really cool. But yeah, so let's go and let's do Within here for Chris. We're asking everyone listening to the podcast to go and add this to your playlist and just go hit that little heart button. And this will be your song forever on your Spotify playlist or YouTube, wherever you are. Make sure you add Within. From Chris here on the Out of My Playlist podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Dave from the podcast. Just jumping on quick to tell you about TrueMediaSolutions.ca. What is TrueMediaSolutions.ca, you're asking? Well, TrueMediaSolutions.ca is the umbrella that is over all the different podcasts that we do here for you. We have several different podcasts. So if you go to TrueMediaSolutions.ca, take a look and you'll find all of the different podcasts that my wife Jennifer or myself do either separately or together. Check us out. Find out more about the podcast that we're doing by going to truemediasolutions.ca. We'll meet you over there. See you soon. Okay, so that was Within from Chris here on the Out of My Playlist podcast. Chris, great to have you here. We're going to talk about another thing that you're up to on top of everything else got going on. I love the name of this band. It feels like Jell-O, scary Jell-O. It's Gelatin Skeleton. can you talk a little bit about this band? Yeah. And first of all, the name. I got to know about the name.
Sure. Yeah. It's the singer Brett Kelly. I think his son was around 5 or 6 at the time, and he said something. I don't know if they were playing, they were doing something, and one of his boys said, "Yeah, like a gelatin skeleton."
Love
And Brett just stopped in his tracks. Was like, "What did you just say?" It was gelatin skeleton. And I think a light bulb went off, and yeah. So his son gets credit for naming the band. Yeah, it's a cool name, right? But we, as we talked about earlier, like learning different genres and playing different things makes us better players. That was my goal, was to, like, I'm in an acoustic duo, I'm in the ABBA tribute, I was in a rock band, I was in all these cover bands and tributes in different areas. And Brett had reached out to me during COVID, expressing, like, "Hey, do you like these bands?" And he would name White Lion, Winger, Poison, all those kind of that era stuff. I said, "Yeah, man, I grew up on it. I love the guitar playing. It's a lot of fun." He said, "Would you be interested in piecing something together?" And I said, "Yeah, because I don't have that, right? All these other bands. Like, I would love to do that." And then as things opened up, he reached out again after COVID and said he's looking to piece something together, but it's going to be more originals, which I thought was cool too, because now it's that genre and it's originals, and I didn't have any of that going on at the time. So we brought in Kevin Eamon on drums, who's just, he's incredible. He's an incredible drummer. He's very animated. He plays, he's a monster drummer. And then we have Miles Rourke on bass, who's a great guy and great player as well. So it's four guys that's very, very, it's super easy to get together. There's zero attitude, there's zero ego. We get there, we all love the genre. We all miss that genre a little bit. So then putting these songs together has been kind of special. And we really love going to the show and seeing, fans of that genre come out and appreciate that people are, kind of still playing it and still passionate about it. So yeah, it's a really fun band to be in. And it was a funny start though. I mean, we picked up Kevin. He was driving to the video shoot for 80s Ladies, and he hadn't even met the guys yet, hadn't even rehearsed, hadn't even shook hands yet. So the
What?
first time we met them was on a where did we do? A Kanata, a theater. We did it on a theater stage. So it's like, "Hey man, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Okay, ready? Three, two,
Oh.
one," and then do the video. So that's not the normal flow
No.
of things, but it worked and it was cool. And Brett, the singer, is he's been in the music, sorry, the movie industry for a long, long time. He's released a lot of films from the Ottawa area. So the videos kept coming for a bit. Like we've done a few, and he's constantly been marketing the band, and it's got some attention where we're playing in at the Sleaze Festival in England this August. So we're playing in Leicester, Nottingham,
Wow.
and Sheffield. Yeah, some cool venues there. And then again, because of all of Brett's hours and time, like there's some magazines in the UK, like Fireworks, they've added a song of ours onto their CD that got released to a bunch of, 20,000 subscribers over in Europe. So ever since that's happened, a lot of the traffic here back home has increased too. The views, the likes, the streams, all that stuff. It's all connected, right?
So does the star guitar ever make it on stage for Gelatin Skeleton?
Wanted, he saw it, he goes, "Hey, that's pretty glam, but I think it would just cross over too much, right?" Like, yeah, it might look cool in one maybe, but yeah, we'll see. But we do have some exciting news with that one. We there was a submission
Yes.
for a Warrant tribute album to Janie Lane.
Nice.
Yeah, so when F&A Records, I do believe they're out of Nashville, they reached out and asked if we'd be interested in submitting a song for selection to be part of this compilation. I think there's 14 songs on it, and it's a tribute, and I believe the funds go to whatever foundation for Janie Lane and everything. So we said, we decided, we all thought Uncle Tom's Cabin, Cherry Pie, Heaven, everything that goes through every, like, Warrant fans' heads. But I think they had a couple submissions for a few. So then I think Brett said, "What about So Damn Pretty? Should Be Against the Law," which is off the first one. So he reached out and asked that. He said, "Yeah, nobody's selected that one." So we decided to go in and do that one. And it had been a few years since I heard it. So when I put it on and I heard the solo, it's probably the biggest solo on that album where they go back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
just this guitar duel. Oh, guys. And our time frame was like this, right? So there's this many notes and this many days to get it done. But we took on the challenge. And my good friend Randy Orr, again at Powder Room, he moved his schedule around. And some of us that had some time booked for original, we put that on hold and went in.
Nice.
Yeah, and Randy really helped us with that. Kevin threw his drums down, did a great job with that. Miles added his bass on top. Then we went into guitar and vocals in a couple days. And it hasn't been released quite yet. It will be released in July. But we were selected to be on the compilation. And it was Maddie Lane, Janie's daughter, that did the selection. We found that out. It was pretty special to be selected with the other bands that are going to be on this and how it was selected. We put a lot of time, a lot of hours into that, especially Randy too, with the editing and everything. We sent it off to Harry Hess at H.
Yes.
Harry from Aaron, right?
Wow.
Yeah. He did Within as well, right? Yeah.
Nice.
So, so Harry mastered it for us and, yeah, we're very, very proud of the way it turned out. And, yeah, we're excited to be part of that compilation and to be part of that. And it was a really cool thing.
Well, any little Easter eggs hiding in that song that might surprise us?
I don't think we tried to stay true to it, right? There was some, you know, a lot of conversation about, like, do we do the solos note for note, or do we branch off and add our own little thing onto it? And I thought that guitar, if you look online with Warren, they really pump it up, right? I just saw them on the weekend in Maryland, and they pumped it up. Here comes the big solo. Here comes the duo, right? And they opened up with that song, which I thought was cool. Like right out of the gates. I'm like, okay. I thought it would have been something else, but they opened up with that one. So I stayed true to it, right? I didn't – I tried to stay as close to the original solo as possible. And the harmonies and everything, we just added the way we would do it, but stayed true to the original. So if you're a diehard Warrant fan, I think people will dig the cover. We didn't switch it into some bluegrass version, or which is cool. I like people that do that.
Yeah.
It's a really cool thing. But we just tried to stay true to the original and like tip our hat, like there you go. We appreciate that first album. Right, we're all fans of it.
Yeah. Awesome. So yeah, we'll definitely play that. So it's gonna be Gelatin Skeleton's version of So Damn Pretty from I'm so excited that you're going to be able to share this with everyone. Please go ahead, add this to your playlist. You can hit that little heart button. It'll be yours for life. And make sure you share it as well. So here it is. Check it out. So Damn Pretty, Gelatin Skeleton's version. Hey, thanks for dropping by the Add to My Playlist podcast. This is the external version of our podcast for non-Spotify listeners. But if you go to Spotify and sign up, you can actually hear the song played here in the podcast without leaving. It's great. Otherwise, you can check us out on YouTube. We'll have links to the songs that we're speaking about within the podcast that you can click on and hear the songs there on YouTube. But thank you so much for listening to the Add to My Playlist podcast. Jump over to Spotify and check us out over there and see what you think. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Okay, so that was So Damn Pretty, Gelatin Skeleton again. Best name of a band in the world. So cool. Definitely make sure you share that with everyone. That's a great cover version of that. Next one, let's talk, Chris, Moment in Time. One of yours, jump back to yours as well. Let's hear the story behind Moment in Time, another amazing one that I'm really enjoying right now.
Oh, thanks so much again. That one's really special to me because I co-wrote the lyrics with my son about 10 years ago. And as much as we talked about Within, like going within, Moment in Time is the same thing. It's hey, this is just a moment in time, right? I think at that time I was reading the book Power of Now, and you know, not thinking about yesterday, not worrying about tomorrow, but right now.
Yeah.
So that song was inspired about just living in the moment. And my son, who was probably 11 at that time, he's 21 now, he helped with the lyrics. Which was the first time ever, and it was a really cool moment. And I performed that with my best friend John Millis back in my hometown, and we used to perform that song out live a few times. And it wasn't until recently where John and I said, let's start recording some of these songs that we've done, you know, and we have a bunch coming out that John and I co-wrote as well. But Within started it, and then the song I did for my wife there, All of Me, that got the ball rolling even more. And then I thought, okay, let's do Moment in Time. So I was playing around with the fractal one time, and I got this really cool delay sound going. It's a preset by Moke Perry. He's the guy down in California that's helped me with some of the presets. Because I'm an amp guy. I'm a tube guy. But all these bands that I'm switching, like I've evolved into, are in ears. They prefer in the box, on the floor. So it was a transition period for me going, you know, where's the Marshall knobs? On the floor? And where's the amps?
Where's my 11? Yeah.
Yes. And where's the wind hitting the back of my shirt from my cabinet? Right? Like, and I still love that. I still get a chance to do that. But the transition was a little bit, but I do, like, playing with the fractal, there's some incredible tones on there.
Yeah.
Like, just some incredible tones. So he was helping with some presets and some things that I wasn't quite sure about. And he sent me this preset called Velvet Sun on the intro of Moment in Time. And it just kind of takes off and goes spacey, but you still hear the guitar notes clean. They're not that affected, but this effect is going on. And all I did was just play the verse part, the chord progression in the verses, I think, for the intro. And it just took off, and I really, really enjoyed the way it sounded. And the song had already been written, so John was back home in St. Thomas, Ontario, and he recorded the vocal parts there. I got the acoustic and everything ready up here. Just went back and forth. Really, one of the best vocal performances, like from John, he killed it. He did a great job with it. I was super proud of that. Again, I got Gary Lalonde to play the bass again on this. Yeah, so I was very happy.
Wow.
Yeah. Randy Orr played drums on this track. And then I had a good friend from the ABBA tribute band, Kelly Latimer, sang some background vocals. So when you hear the female vocals, that's all Kelly in the background there. Nice. And it just pieced together. And it was a special moment when it was released because just my son, right? And then finally getting out there. And it's a special song. It's just the lyrics mean a lot to me personally. It was about a time we were going through. It was a time of divorce, a time of, you know, the factory closing, and just kind of a heavier time, but realizing, hey, it's not always going to be like this.
Yeah.
Two verses, and in the third verse, I think John and I always just sang the first verse over again. Because it's just a moment in time. It's just a moment in time. But then on the third one, it's almost like closing a book. A third verse was written, and it's almost like, hey, that was then, this is now. And so the very last chorus part says it was a moment in time. So for some weird reason, the song was written 10 years ago. It didn't have that third verse. It didn't have that closure to it. It was just left open. Ah, let's sing the first verse over again. We didn't know. And it just, as we were recording it, I put pen to paper and put some words together. And it's almost like, because now when I hear the first part of the song, it's like, yeah, there it is. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is where we are now. Close the book. And the song ends like that. And yeah, it's pretty special.
I love the thought behind it, too. Like, when we come and hear this now, you're going to be like anticipating that. And then knowing how long it took from the time the song was originally written and performed to the recording and having that book close. That's kind of interesting. It's not all within a 1 hour period in the studio. This is a lifetime.
Exactly. Yeah. And the video that I put together for it, I had no, you know, I wasn't planning on releasing it. It's just pretty much a photo album of myself with my kids during this whole time. And I did it for my son and my daughter. And then, but again, like 10 years ago, showing those pictures in that verse. And then when they were a little bit older in the second verse, and then where we're at today for the, it's almost like it was just meant to be paused for a while and then done. Mm. This. But the few people that are close to me, when I showed them the video, they saw, you have to release that. It's good for any parents that are going through a divorce, you know, that are going through their kids. Cause it's about that. It's about, hey, I love you just as much today as I did when we were all living together. But this is just a moment in time, and now it's kind of come full circle. And so the video was released. It's on YouTube. And but it was weird. It was like releasing a personal photo album.
Yeah.
And there you go, like, to everyone. But then, you know, the reaction I've received from it, like, I think it had 11,000 views in the first 2 weeks. And
nice.
Yeah, like, just not that numbers matter or views or anything, but I think it just resonated with people. And I've had some beautiful about it from people that have known me this whole time and know the kids and or that are going through similar things themselves, right? So it's been a pretty powerful song, and we're pretty happy with the way it turned out.
Good. We'll make sure we put a link to that in the show notes so people can watch as well and enjoy that as well. That's kind of cool. I love it. Okay, so Moment in Time, another one of Chris's originals, and so glad we can share this on the podcast, Chris. This is great. So asking everybody to go and add this to your playlist and make sure you share this as well. So here's Chris's song, Moment in Time. Hey, so if you are interested, you know we do have a YouTube channel. Head over to our YouTube channel. Links are in the show notes. Come on over there and check out the songs that we talk about here on the episode. You can actually head over there, see them, hear them, add them to your YouTube playlist. Oh, yeah, you can do that. We won't charge anything. You can come and check out all the great songs we talk about and hear them over there, in addition to right here on Spotify. It's the Add to My Playlist podcast. Thanks for listening. Okay, so that was Moment in Time, another great song by Chris. Make sure you add that to your playlist, Chris. We're going to talk about your connection with Canadian Idol. And if people are like, wait, you have Canadian Idol? Yeah, we have Canadian Idol, but we do it better. tell me about your connection with a Canadian Idol winner and kind of what you've done in the past. I'm really interested in the story behind you got connected with all this.
Sure. Yeah, and for the American listeners, if they remember, the same year that Daughtry won third place, that'll be the same year that Aaron won third place. We were involved in a cover band in the St. Thomas area. It was called Hooligans Holiday. The name was from the Motley Crue song off their album, the only album, I think, without Vince Neil. I think they had John Corabi singing on that album, but we loved that song. Anyways, we were a cover band, and we had a couple gigs booked, and the singer that was in that band couldn't make it for health reasons or personal something. Couldn't make it, but the rest of us were itching to play, and so we were looking around trying to find a singer. And my friend Chico Sanchez reached out and said, look, there's this guy that's been coming to, I can't remember if it was karaoke or what it was, but there's this guy named Aaron. He can really sing. Like, he'd probably step in for you, but trust me. Okay, so we talked on the phone, gave him a set list. Didn't meet him, didn't rehearse, didn't do anything. Say, can you do these songs? He said, yeah, no problem. And we met him that night, and he walked up on stage. Like, the band was already sound checked, and we're like, okay, this could go, you know, a couple ways. And it went the way I didn't think it could go. And it was goosebumps all night. Like, that guy, he's probably one of the best male vocalists I've ever stood beside. Really? It was, he would, oh my gosh, man. Hearing him sing in a room, his tone, his everything about him, his pitch is perfect. He's, it comes right out of the soul, right out of the heart. He's amazing. But Aaron Walpole is his name. And we did a couple shows with him, and he said, hey, look, I'm involved with this TV show. It's a singing competition. I got to go away to Toronto for a bit, so my schedule is going to be a little, you know, back and forth for a bit. And he went, and he did well. He got in the top 100, and then he'd come back, I think, and he goes, okay, I'm going back. Now he's in the top 50. And I can't remember at what point he said, oh, I got to stay in Toronto now. And he started living in the house with all the other Idol contestants. But he made top 25, top 10.
Wow.
And he ended up getting second runner-up. So he got third place.
Nice.
Yeah, so the exposure he got from that was incredible. But we weren't sure what direction. You know, he was getting a lot of things handed to him. He could have done he's a theater guy. And he was already a pretty successful theater performer at that time. But it ended up landing a deal with Harry Hess. The connection came from for the mastering is Harry owns a studio, Vespa Music Studios in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And Harry offered a production deal to record an album. And it ended up getting a deal with Sony BMG for distribution and everything like that. So it went from playing Mustang Sally on a Friday night in St. Thomas to, okay, you guys have 3 weeks to release an album or whatever the heck it was. There was a time crunch there, So as much as we were all itching to like, oh, I've got a song, I've got a song, we've all got songs, there wasn't enough time to sit there and craft an album with original music because we had never written the four of us together or anything. But Aaron did have two originals that were pretty much worked out and they sounded great. So two of his originals were on there. I think two Harum Scarum songs went on. We nice. Covered Honestly and Jealousy, which are really cool songs. Yeah, great songs. And the I think he's co-written with Alana Miles and Lennon and Macy are his daughters.
Wait, no. From Nashville.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. So on that album, Brad Stella, the father, who's an incredible singer, songwriter, guitar player, vocalist himself, 42nd Street is the one he wrote. Yeah.
Cool.
And then the other ones, I have to ask Harry about the band. There was another band. There was all these submissions. So we went to the studio. We were kind of told, hey, it's a quick time crunch. Here's a bunch of songs. Aaron, you know, choose which ones you want to cover kind of thing. But they hadn't been released, I think, some of them. But they sounded great. We listened to 25 and some by Pete Lesperance, the guitar player as well, from here. It's one of my huge influences.
Oh, yeah.
So this took a crazy, right? It took a crazy turn. When I went to Vespa once, it was Pete and Harry. And they're like, hey, we're just finishing a song on the album. Do you want to listen to it? And I'm like, okay. So I went to the control room and it was Pete, Harry, and myself, right? And I'm the 15-year-old in me was doing backflips. I had opened up for those guys on the Mood Swing tours way back in my hometown. So I'd already met them and opened up for them. But now to be in a working environment and Pete was lending guitars to record on the album and all this stuff. But I just smiled at the end and what's so funny? And I know they're both huge Queen fans. How would you guys feel if you were in the studio with Brian May and Freddie Mercury? Because that's how I feel right now. Like, I love Harum Scarum. Pete's one of my favorite guitar players, man. And Harry's one of the best vocalists around, you know, and Darren, all that. I love those guys so much. So to be in that environment, also, we were recording in the studio where one of my favorite bands had recorded many of their albums there, right? And Harry took me into the Harum Scarum vault and showed me all the CDs and the merch from Japan and the personal guitars and his signature guitar. I think he played 12-gauge strings on that thing. I can't remember, man. They're the thickest strings I've ever played. But it was all right there. And I just, it was an incredible moment as a Harum Scarum fan, a fan of music. Yeah. But also to see Harry's incredible in the studio. Like, he's got an incredible ear. He's been doing it a long time. A lot of people in the industry respect him there. So that was really, really cool. So we got to release that album. And because of the time crunch too, like, there, Pete Lesperance is on that album quite a bit. Like, he plays a lot of the guitar. There was another player too. I can't remember his name at the moment. It's been a while. But Kevin Komatsu, our drummer, he got to redo all the tracks. He was really quick in there and bumped them all out. He did really great. And Aaron did a great job. Like, we're really happy with that album. It's got some great stuff on there.
Cool. So which song from there can we highlight here on the Add to My Playlist podcast?
Oh, man. I love Control.
Control?
I like that song. It's kind of, yeah, Control is a really nice intro and it kicks in and it's a great vocal performance. Loved the guitar sound on that one, I believe, is Billy Talent and Ian Thornley were in the studio at the same time. And I can't remember. I think it was Billy Talent's amps, the Diesels. Harry called Gavin and asked if we could plug in the diesel heads, those VH4s or whatever they are. And we plugged one of those things in and the console room was just, I thought these Marshalls were loud. Those diesels are loud amps, man. So the tone that came out of that, we were pretty happy with and everything. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So let's jump into Control. I love the story behind this song. This is, and all those connections and all the names you're talking about. My gosh, I'm having my own moment of like, oh, I know these people. I love it.
Oh, cool, man.
So cool. I'll say, yeah. Okay, so Control, let's add this to our playlist here on Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening. And let's make sure we hit that little heart button and make this song yours here on the Add to My Playlist podcast. Okay, so I know you're not a musician.
I got it. Okay.
What if you're just a music lover? Yes, perfect. You're the perfect person to come on the Add to My Playlist podcast. Share with us your favorite breakup song, your summertime put the convertible top down song, Maybe your wedding song. What was your first dance? Oh, come on. All romantic. Come on, the Add to My Playlist podcast, and share your favorite song and the story behind it. We would love to have you. Yes, you. You love music? Come on, the Add to My Playlist podcast today. Yeah, fun. All right, here we go. So, everyone, that was Control. Great tune. Definitely. I love the connection with Canadian Idol and all that. That's amazing. And the one thing I'm picking up on too, Chris, as we're talking, is you talked about a drummer showing up to an event, not even knowing the band, shaking hands and going. You're talking about, meeting other people in the future and not having time to get together and meet them really well, but just they walk up on stage and sing. Like, there's a little pattern going on here for you and your musical background, where you just seem to be meeting people and doing things. I love that. And I'm also picking up on you putting aside your own personal stuff to make room for other people to do their projects. Mm. In many situations, you've been doing this. So I kind of like how this is kind of happening in multiple times during your musical career. It's quite interesting to see this kind of unfold several times.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. It happened when I played with an Elvis tribute. We did a tour out east once, and that was with Roy LeBlanc. He said, "Hey, just so you know, we have a Buddy Holly tribute opening up tonight." I'm like, "Oh, cool, man! I can't wait to watch it." He goes, no, you're playing it." And I was like, "Yeah, no, you mean tomorrow night?" He goes, "No, tonight, man. Like, this is at soundcheck." I go, "This is Buddy Holly, man. We're just gonna do 5 or 6 songs." He goes, "You'll be okay, right?" I'm like, "No, I definitely won't. You know, I don't know the songs." But I had a quick chat with some of the players, like, "This one's a 1-4-5, this one's 2-6-5. You know, they're just the progressions. It's in this key, it's in E, here we go." The keyboard player had a chart, so if I ever got lost, I would just walk back and just take a quick look. But if I had done that 5 years prior to, I'd be extreme. I was nervous that night, don't get me wrong. I got a funny story about Roy, too. But that showed me, like, no one in the band was stressed. They were just like, "Hey, man, no, it's 3 chords. It's this key. Let's go. It's 1-4-5. And they were right. Like, at the end of it, it wasn't that bad, right? There's no way you could just pay a Dream Theater tribute showing up tonight. We're starting off with Dance of Eternity. You'd be like, "Nah, I'm out," right? Like, that's impossible. But there's a lot of these bands from that genre, that era. It's pretty standard and pretty straightforward. But it just takes a lot of shows and a lot of understanding, and teaching music has helped me with that. But I think I'm over like 2,200 shows now live over the last, wow. So I've been doing it a long time. And it was funny because after I've done shows too, where I showed up with that Elvis tribute, they were all different players. I showed up, plugged in and played. At the end, I went up to the bass players. "Hey man, my name's Chris, nice to meet you." We had no idea who we were or anything. It wasn't until after the show. We had just spent an hour and a half playing a show together. "Hey, I'm Bill. Nice to meet you. I live in Windsor," whatever. So as the more and more, I was just down in New Orleans, same thing. Like, you can go up on stage, you're like, "What's this? What key is it?" And boom, let's go. And it's once you get to that level of just, it's going to be okay. And if you understand, just the structure of songs, you can hear it when it's coming. And I'm not saying like all music, you can do this. There's obviously some really technical stuff that would be possible to do. But yeah, it's just been flowing. And since I came up here, there was a guy that pulled me aside and said, "Man, you're playing a lot of different bands. Like, how did you?" And I'm like, "It's not all about, how many scales that guy know or how fast is he or what kind of gear does he have. Some of those things are important. But it's, can you light a barbecue and flip some burgers with this guy? And is he a good person? Is there ego there? Is there attitude? Is he humble? Does it show up for load-in? Does he help with tear-down? All those things, right? So I don't know. I've been very, very lucky, and I'm surrounded by – I don't think there's a band that I play in that has attitude or ego in it right now. And I hope that continues because it's – you look forward to the shows. I'm surrounded by talented musicians but also really, really wonderful people these days, and that makes me very, very happy.
And that's what I'm getting talking to you, Chris. For somebody with the amount of experience and connections and things that you've done in the past, you could easily slide into – not having time to even to speak with me, which I totally appreciate. But I just get from you and your heart and who you are as a person, you're the guitar teacher that I wanted back when I was learning. Seriously, I think I would have learned faster and it probably would have sunk in easier. I know when I took lessons back when I was a kid, I'd have my book and someone would forget their book in class, and I would just give them my book and be like, okay, page three, top of the page, and one, two, three, and go. And I just had it all in my head, right? But I couldn't really get the theory side to sit with me.
Yeah.
But it was just in my head.
Gotcha.
Right. So I think if I was sitting with you, I would have got way further ahead as a young guitar player. So that's cool.
I appreciate you saying that. And I do get that from some of my older students as well. But I just talk to the students like the way I wish I was talked to. You know, I went through a few too, and one was brilliant. He was such a great player, but he had the social interaction of a brick wall. And I couldn't talk to the guy because there was none of this. So the communication is just as important as the knowledge and the ability to play the theory. The communication is where it's at. Right? And you have to change with every student. Like, everyone's different. So you kind of just find that groove. And I just try to make it enjoyable and use a lot of examples, right? Like, when someone's like, what's a Lydian mode? I'm like, listen to Flying in a Blue Dream by Joe Satriani. We'll talk next week. That's Lydian. Listen to the Simpsons intro. That's Lydian. Like, that's all we need to talk about for a week. Just go listen to it.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Nice. Awesome. So before we go, Chris, how do people connect with you if they're interested in taking lessons in person or virtually? And as well, just to talk music and to continue the conversation, where do we go?
Yeah, thanks for that. Chris Eveland Music on Facebook is a great way, or my email is chrisevelandmusic@gmail.com. Those are the two best ways to reach out. And I always look forward to helping people on their musical journeys. Yeah. So.
That's great. Later today, I'm going to be talking to the keyboard player from the band.
Oh, cool.
So Eye of the Tiger and all of that. So that's going to be interesting. Any favorite songs from Survivor pop
up? Oh, man, you know, like just recently I was in Daisy Train and we used to do Eye of the Tiger all the time. And it was just so fun, right? Like, it's just that classic. As soon as people hear that 16th note, you can see their faces. The shots are coming. You think of Rocky IV or whatever movie that was in.
Yeah.
That's cool, though. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean? So I love it. I love music and I love talking music. And having somebody on with as much history and background that you have is a joy for me.
Thanks, really, Dave. I appreciate your time. And thanks so much for sharing the music with everyone, too, and doing what you're doing. That's a pretty cool thing for all of us. So I hope you continue doing that because we really appreciate it.
Awesome. So everyone, please go check out Chris's information, everything in the show notes. Chris, again, you've been very gracious with your time. I know you got a lot of guitar stuff to do. And that star guitar is still catching my eye. So I love it. Thanks for your time today, Chris.
Right on.
Hey, guys, just jumping on here quick. This is the Add to My Playlist podcast. My name is Dave. If you go to our website, truemediasolutions.ca/Add to My Playlist, you can now leave us a voicemail and we'll put you on the podcast. Yes, you can be on the podcast. We would love to have you on. Leave us a message when you go there. This is what it sounds like. I recorded one. I'm going to insert it right here so you can hear what it sounds like. Leave us a message. Tell us what your favorite episode was. Who else should we talk about on the podcast? Who should we have as a guest? You tell us. Your voice on our podcast. I love this. Here we go. This is what it sounds like. So I'm over here on truemediasolutions.ca/add to my playlist. I'm on the website for the Add to My Playlist podcast. I see a great video looking for guests. I see all kinds of great stuff here about the Add to My Playlist podcast. And then there's this button. It says, leave us a message. We want to hear from you. A podcast that wants to hear from its listeners? OMG. Yes, you can go to truemediasolutions.ca/add to my playlist. And you can click the link and record a message, which we will include in our podcast. Do you want to hear your voice in the podcast? Leave us a comment. Leave us a suggestion. Hey, if you have a song that you want to hear featured on the Add to My Playlist podcast, record it right here on the website. We'll use you in the episode and we'll give you full credit. Go to truemediasolutions.ca/add to my playlist, hit the button, record a message, and we'll put you on the podcast. Thanks for listening to the Add to My Playlist podcast. So head over to truemediasolutions.ca/add to my playlist. Leave us a voicemail. Very simple. Come on, don't wait. We want to hear from you. Thanks.